Tämä on Basson vieraat podcast. Basso.
Hey, how are you? It's morning in Los Angeles, later at night here. How are you, man?
Oh, it's great. I'm great.
First of all, congrats on the new album. Sounds really good.
Oh, thank you.
The first song we heard was Heroes with DJ Premier. Can you talk us a little bit how that cooperation got started and what was it like working with Premier, who is an absolute legend in terms of hip hop?
Yeah. You know, Heroes was one of the first records I made when COVID hit. And it was one of those, like, I just wrote the raps. I went downstairs. I escaped the family. I went to the basement and just wrote some raps and recorded them. And didn't really think about it much. You know, I always kept coming back to these verses. I was like, I really like these. There's something, there's a spirit here. And then, you know, fast forward, eventually I hit Primo and, you know, talked about the record, explained it, sent it to him. He immediately called me and I'm like, oh God, you know, this is all through text. And then he calls me after he heard it. And I'm like, oh man, like this is either going to be good or bad. And sure enough, he was just super, super fucking with the record. Very complimentary. And yeah, he's a legend. He is one of the greatest producers of all time. So to have the opportunity to work with someone like that is never lost on me. It's never lost on me that this person's production shaped my childhood and really who I am as a person. You know, the songs that he made that were the backdrop. Yeah. So to make a record with him and to make a record with him that I know will withstand the test of time because it sounds like a record from, you know, 25 years ago is important for me and not for what like the world tells me that Heroes is or like the people that give me compliments about it, but just for myself, like knowing that, you know what, I got one of these types of songs with Primo, one of these types of records that like, you know, it sounds like your childhood. Yeah, you got one with your childhood hero.
Yeah, I think he really delivered his signature thing, whatever it is. Because when the song starts, you instantly get that feeling like if you hear an instrumental about some gangstar songs like Mass Appeal or Just to Get a Rep, it instantly takes you to that mood and that era in time.
Right.
And when Hero starts, I get so much of that instantly. But about the lyrics, it's funny that you mentioned like quite early in the song, the film New Jersey Drive. And funny or not, that was a big hit among my friends here in Finland. And of course, we wanted to almost go and steal some cars. But
yeah,
what was New Jersey Drive a sort of influential movie in your youth? Because when we saw that, we wanted to dress like them, the Carhartt hoodies, vests.
Yeah.
I'm wearing the same kind of cargo pants right now.
Yeah, that's fucking great. I love that. And where are you again? You're in Finland?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a fucking great story. The fact that New Jersey Drive made you want to go steal some cars. Of course it did. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like that movie, you know, it made us want to steal cars. It did. And then we stole cars. So that was the other part of it. And I think particularly for like some of my OGs, they really stole cars. You know, I was kind of more of a, you know, break into the car and get out of there versus stealing the car myself. But I mean, that was a part of our formative years, which is crazy to think. And yeah, I mean, rolling around in Stolens, like that was a part of those years.
I think, you know, it sort of became under the general umbrella of American hip hop culture with movies like Boys in the Hood, for example. That's based on the West Coast, but there's a lot of hip hop in it. And it almost felt like an extension to the albums that we just heard, like NWA or Ice Cube or the East Coast rap with New Jersey Drive. So here in Finland, being very far away, it felt like this is as well a part of the hip hop culture. Was it anything like that in the States for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously being in America and in the city, I think that, you know, the proximity was probably different in terms of, you know, Finland versus Seattle. But I think that there was still, you know, hip hop was birthed from oppression. It came from the ghettos of America where that had been forgotten, displaced, left, abandoned. Like this is where hip hop it rose from nothing, from concrete, literally, where it's the 50-year anniversary. So if you look at a movie like Boys in the Hood, like, yeah, that's reflecting life in the hood. If you look at if you look at the movie NWA or any gangster rap from like that era, like that's, it was just reflecting life. We labeled it gangster rap. That was just real life. And I think that that's part of like growing up where it's different, right? It's different for me growing up in a, you know, upper middle class family in the city where I didn't have to escape my neighborhood in order to make it. This is a very different experience participating in hip hop when it's not your only means to get out, or at least you're told via the media that you have entertainment or you have sports. That's what, that's what the media has told us.
On the topic of growing up in Seattle, I've been to Seattle twice, and it's a great music town. It has a great legacy of from Jimi Hendrix to grunge and all those bands. What was sort of the role of hip hop in Seattle when you were growing up? I get that you picked up, you know, writing lyrics when you were a teenager, but was hip hop big in your youth, or was it still more on the electric guitar thing that's going on in Seattle when you were growing up?
For me, hip hop was huge. For the city itself, it wasn't. You know, we are from the grunge capital. This is where grunge came from. And we're coming off of, you know, Nirvana. We're coming off of Soundgarden. Like, we're coming off of Pearl Jam. These are massive bands that really pioneered the genre that we call grunge, created it. And this is also the peak of when I'm starting to get into using my voice as an instrument, the very beginning and foundational years of that. So it definitely was there. It was small. It was underground. Hip hop had not been commodified in the same way yet. And yes, you know, we at that point had massive successes in hip hop. It was pop culture, but it was not pop culture like it is today. It wasn't the number one genre in the world like it is today.
Did you guys have to sort of prove yourselves, or did you get a lot of flack from, you know, being hip hoppers, white hip hoppers from Seattle? Did you face a lot of, not criticism, but was there something to prove that you can do good hip hop in a serious way, being a white kid from Seattle?
I mean, it's tough for me because I've always been a white kid from Seattle. So it's tough for me to really like have a different experience than that. But I think that there's something to prove just being an MC, period. Like, you always have, like, that's where the competitive nature of this sport comes from, is like, yo, I have to show and prove right now. And I call it sport simply because, you know, we're engaged in battle, in warfare in the cipher. Like, that is where everything is in the moment. We're in a place of, that's our like Super Bowl as an MC, is like, yo, let me, like, the cipher is the Super Bowl, it was back then. Now it's not. But in the 90s, freestyling and that was like, you had to show and prove. So I don't know if that was harder as a white dude or not. Like, I was definitely oftentimes one of the only ones, but I don't remember that being like, oh God, I just have to get over this like fact that I was like, no, dude, I'm a white dude, but like, let me rap.
The competitiveness, and like you said, the sport, the Super Bowl, it's embedded in hip hop. It's the first thing, I'm a better MC than you are. That's the premonition. How did you build your confidence to go out there and say to other MCs that I'm a better MC than you? Did it take a lot of building up, or were you like sort of from the beginning, okay, let's smoke these guys?
You're trying to smoke. You're trying to win. You know, if you got a posse track with the homies, like, you want everyone to do good, but you're trying to win. You want the best verse. I don't know any other. It's not like, oh, this one, let's make sure this guy shines. It's like, no, like, I'm trying to shine every single time. That's just part of inherent competitive nature of the genre, I think. But also, I don't know. Like, you look at like James Brown, you look at Prince and Michael Jackson, like that whole like experience where like James Brown pulls up Michael Jackson on stage and then Prince comes out with the guitar, like, those dudes were fierce competitors with each other. You can feel it watching a YouTube video from 30 years ago, 40 years ago. I think that there is that drive. It's not just a hip hop thing. I think a hip hop thing, you know, it took it to another level in terms of competition, but that it's there for all of us.
Yeah, I mean, you could trace that thing's roots to somewhere ancient Greek where poets were competing.
Yes, exactly.
I really want to ask about, you know, you growing up in Seattle and then moving to college to Santa Fe in New Mexico, which is a totally different place from climate and culture. What did that do to you as an artist? What kind of impact that time in Santa Fe have on your artistic career?
I found my voice in Santa Fe, and which probably just means that like puberty finally hit and my voice got a little bit lower. It's definitely slow on the puberty train. But I remember in Santa Fe having the, because I didn't really go to school. I mean, like, I wasn't there for school. I was there to, like, because that's what socially I was supposed to do. I was trying to get into the music department. They didn't let me in the music department. I didn't make it. So that's a cool story to me. And it's a reflection of how we teach music. Because now, looking back 20 years later and what I've accomplished in music, I didn't get accepted into a small liberal arts school that didn't require SAT scores. Like, I had no musical training. I couldn't hold a note. Yet I've gone on to win 4 Grammys and they wouldn't let me in the music school because I couldn't do certain things in terms of the technical ability, in terms of how we've taught music in the past. So it was there that I was like, oh, word, you're not going to let me in the music school? Fuck you. Watch what I'm about to do.
That's great, because music comes from the heart and not from the accolades or theory. And you just are living proof of that. Hey, now you got the new album out. You're coming to Europe on the road in April. How have the shows in Europe been for you? Obviously, you're now doing huge arenas. Is there any kind of difference between gigging in America and gigging in overseas?
Yes, there is a big difference. I would say that in general, Europe is
reserved.
No, the opposite. I'm trying to think of a word than better. In general, I would say that the America hops on to whatever is the flavor of the week really quickly. And I think that there is a preservation in Europe in terms of artists being able to have long tenured careers and being able to tour in Europe at a level that they can't in America. And that's not to say that that's the case for me, but I think that it's a case that it's a statement in terms of Europe and the fans that end up coming out to the shows. There's a sense of gratitude that, you know, in Finland, I'm from Seattle. I made it out to Finland. People are like, wow, you're fucking here. Thank you. I go down to LA. They're like, motherfucker, what's up?
You came
down the street. Yeah, you're here. We expect you to be here. Like, it's just different than I think that the energy overall.
Well, welcome overseas. I hope to see you on the road. Thanks so much for talking to you. It's truly an honor. And I hope to see you on the road.
Tämä on Basson Vieraat podcast. Basso.